is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and in the complex, political, agenda-driven, and recklessly judgmental climate surrounding domestic violence in America, all I've ever said was this: give me the video evidence before I can draw a fair conclusion. And in the case of Kansas City Chiefs running back Kareem Hunt, we have just that. A video of Hunt kicking and shoving a woman last February in the hallway of a Cleveland hotel. And suddenly, the future of a potential championship team is in jeopardy, with the Chiefs immediately cutting ties with Hunt and leaving his very doubtful future in the lap of the National Football League, which is, yes, dealing with another Ray Rice disaster. Whatever the lead-up was to this episode, and the woman says she wouldn't have sex with one of the men in Hunt's apartment inside that hotel, that's really not that relevant here. The proof is in the video footage acquired by TMZ, and that footage is damning. Hunt confronting the woman, pushing her after she allegedly called him the N-word, and after the woman hit him in the face, Hunt charging down the hall and kicking the woman after one of two men trying to restrain Hunt knocked her over. When the video was released on Friday, the Chiefs immediately sent him home from their practice facility, but that franchise is the latest to be shamed for what appears to be a cover-up, or at the very least, blasé attitudes, after having knowledge of this incident way back in August, but not doing enough, evidently, to investigate, obviously, now that it's clear a video was available at the time. Owner Clark Hunt said back then in August, a beautiful day in Missouri, training camp, said he was aware of Hunt's involvement in that incident, and he was also aware of another episode in the offseason in which his running back was accused of punching a man. While the team now claims not to have seen this hotel video until Friday, Clark Hunt didn't seem terribly concerned at the time about getting to the bottom of his young star's issues. Just get him the football. Why should we look into this? Right, Clark?
The team's made up of a bunch of young men, right? And they're not always going to make the best decisions. But we have a strong support system, both with the coaching staff and also with our player development department, that works with young guys and talks to them about the situations that they want to be in. Kareem is a young man, second year in the league, obviously had a very big year on the field last year. I'm sure he learned some lessons this offseason and hopefully won't be in those kind of situations in the future.
Do you guys anticipate any kind of suspensions or anything for him going forward?
I really don't, but we tend not to be privy to those decisions that are made by the NFL.
So was Clark Hunt covering up for Kareem Hunt? And was the owner inferring that the NFL knew about the Kareem Hunt incident in Cleveland when he said he wasn't privy to the league's knowledge of that situation? Why wasn't he privy? He's only the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. And isn't that, by the way, what Roger Goodell originally said about Ray Rice? More interested in downplaying that story than probing the story? Yes, this looks like the next Ray Rice nightmare for the NFL. Is the NFL once again prioritizing damage control over trying to locate the damned video last summer? This is why these leagues and the sports owners find themselves in public relations scandals all the time. Rather than be proactive, they just poo-poo the matter, as Hunt did, in hopes it would go away in a small market in the middle of the country. Sorry, regardless of geography, there always is a prosecutor with a surveillance video. It should be pointed out that no arrests were made, no charges filed as of yet, though police in Cleveland were called to the scene. But what makes the Hunt case different than other he said, she said cases like the landmark Rice incident is that we are able to see this video. It's clear to all of our eyeballs. And Hunt, the owner, so mealy-mouthed in August, had better respond strongly to this video as he stands in the middle of the heartland, Kansas City, where the Chiefs already had taken a gamble on star receiver Tyreek Hill, who pleaded guilty in 2015 to a deplorable crime, punching and choking his pregnant girlfriend, but who since has been a model citizen and had the conviction dismissed and removed from his record last summer. I don't know how. It was no coincidence Friday that Washington Redskins Vice President Doug Williams, a local and national hero as the first black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, apologized for downplaying domestic allegations against Reuben Foster as quote-unquote small potatoes. In comments he obviously should not have made, Williams downplayed the team's signing of Foster, who was arrested last weekend on a domestic battery charge and immediately was cut by the San Francisco 49ers. Williams also said everybody in the Redskins front office, including owner Daniel Snyder, who once said he never would condone domestic violence in his organization, had signed off on the Foster decision. Here was Williams' original interview this week on DC radio station The Team 980, seemingly implying in the audio that the President of the United States has done far worse than Reuben Foster. Another comment that absurdly misses the mark, don't you think?
It ain't something I would condone, but at the same time, I think we are in a business of at least looking into. You know, I could sit here and I won't name a bunch of teams and coaches who took on players that, you know, got a lot of baggage and nobody say anything about. But, you know, you can't get in nick and pick in what they do and what you do. You got to look at it from your standpoint. It was a lot of thought went into it. It wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment type of thing. You know, we all gathered, we talked about it, and we knew it was going to be some risk-rewards involved in it. Oh, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. I mean, and like I say, rightfully so, with all the stuff that is going on in this country. You know, we got people who are in high places that you know, that has done far worse if you look at it realistically, and you know, they still up there. So at the same, this is small potatoes to a lot of things out there, but at the same time, it's a big issue in America today, whether or not it's in football, whether or not it's in everyday life, whether or not it's in politics.
And here was Williams' apology on Friday.
It's not for any questions whatsoever. First of all, I want to apologize to the organization, my wife, my mom, my sisters, and the six daughters that I have. You know, I really, the last night has also been real tough on me from an emotional standpoint, because never in my life that I've said anything so insensitive as, you know, I've said. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses, because there is no excuses. And it's not allowed to say no more than the fact that if you know me, you would understand. You know, growing up, I understand the climate and what's going on. And for me to make comments like I did, I just want to apologize to anybody out there with an earshot, especially the ladies of this area across the country. And like I said, I got six daughters. There's no way in the world that I would tolerate anything like that. So for me to just say something like that, just want to apologize.
Now, the difference between the Hunt and Foster cases is that we've seen video with Hunt. We haven't with Foster, though Foster has been arrested twice for domestic abuse as accused by the same woman. There is no video attached. And Foster never was charged after his first arrest. The woman recanted her story with video evidence in that case showing she was lying. So instead of lumping them together right now, as much as everybody wants to in the media, can I ask this? Based on her previous lying, is it possible she is lying again? And should the NFL permanently cast away Foster before he is allowed due process? Hunt shouldn't be allowed due process. I can see what he did. I still don't know what happened in any of this Reuben Foster stuff. It's he said, she said. No, I don't think Foster should be cast away. And this is where I give legal lessons to these knee-jerk clickbait opportunists in the media. Give him his due process. Yes, the 49ers were more than justified to cut Foster, their talented but troubled linebacker, after he violated their established zero-tolerance policy with him. Yes, Foster blew his second chance with that team when he foolishly got back together with the ex-girlfriend who previously lied that he'd abused her, which led her to call police last weekend from a Tampa hotel and accuse Foster for a second time. But until Foster is charged and prosecuted and the alleged victim is participating in the investigation, then what has changed at this point? What if no charges are filed again? Because, I don't know, she might be lying again. The Redskins are taking considerable heat for claiming Foster off waivers. That doesn't surprise me. They should take heat, with one D.C. columnist wondering why they claimed Foster and haven't signed Colin Kaepernick to replace the injured Alex Smith. I will answer that. Foster is a better football project than Kaepernick, who has not been a star since 2013 and hasn't played in 2 years. You know my thoughts on Kaepernick. He sucks. That's why he's not getting chances. And I wouldn't bring in a guy who doesn't care about football. I don't care about the anthem. I care about my leader of the team caring about playing football. When I worked in San Francisco in 2015, he looked at a couple of us and said, I don't really care if I don't have football in my life anymore. Well, then why would I hire him to play quarterback for my team? That's what the social justice warriors are ignoring here. A Mariotti aside. What the Warriors also aren't mentioning in ripping the Redskins for Neanderthal thinking is that Foster won't even play or practice this year. He's not on the team. He's on the commissioner's exempt list pending a league investigation, which is what probably should happen with Hunt here, because I think a suspension could be appealed and he could be eligible for the postseason, which would be another nightmare for the NFL. Obviously, if Foster is convicted, he should be kicked right out of the league. But if by chance he's cleared by the league and the criminal justice system, the Redskins then have every right to consider him for a roster spot, folks. An arrest is not a conviction. It's just too easy a column, too easy a hot take, too easy an attaboy or attagirl from a media boss. Due process. Okay? One more time. Kareem Hunt doesn't deserve due process. I see what he did. I don't know what Foster did. Give him his due process. I need to know more. I am responsible. Maybe you aren't. I am. Okay? Okay. Just the same, the Redskins, by virtue of this gamble, should be absolutely blistered if indeed Foster is convicted, for they will have shown crass, misguided thinking about his character. Here was head coach Jay Gruden reminding everybody that Foster might never play for Washington.
When he hit the waiver wire, we decided to claim him. We understand that there's a lot of things that he's gone through, and there's some issues there. But we're going to let the NFL take their time and do the right thing with the investigation, as are we. I mean, there's some concern, without a doubt. You understand that, you know, what's going on there. But at the end of the day, we decided to pick up his rights. And right now, it's not even our rights. He's on a commissioner's exempt list. So really, he can just come in here on an occasional basis. I met him today for the first time and since the combine and his pro day and all that stuff. So we'll just let it play out. He's got a lot of work to do before he even thinks about anything as far as being with the Redskins. You know, so like I said, he's got the NFL to deal with. He's got the law enforcement to deal with. He's got us to deal with. We hold our standards very high also. We just want to get to the bottom of what happened. And that's it.
From a public relations standpoint, this is a visible smudge for a franchise that stubbornly clings to a racist team nickname. But in the big picture, yeah, it could be Foster is a monster who should be put away, or maybe just a victim of his own stupidity. But again, unlike Hunt, who is guilty of sin, I want Foster to go through that process. It's interesting how the level of outcry often depends on the person in the crosshairs. They crucified Ohio State coach Urban Meyer, who has managed to reach the brink of college football's Final Four, because he mishandled domestic violence allegations against since-fired assistant Zach Smith, who, again, never was charged with a crime. No video, okay? We have pictures, but we don't know where the pictures came from, or if they're real pictures, or when they were shot, or we need to see the video, period. Not much was uttered nationally about Doug Williams when he said what he said, but boy, did Urban Meyer go through hell. To this day, the Meyer haters are trying to push him out, with a report Friday indicating he will resign after the 2019 season. Meyer had a cryptic response.
When you have a week with somebody like Wyatt Davis, who's about to make his first start on this stage, does that person get more of your attention during the week, or do you try to ignore some of that stuff? How do you handle him going into something like this?
No, they get a lot of attention, and more attention from their line coach, obviously, and Kevin Wilson's knee-deep in that. I'm involved, but Wyatt is a guy that you've covered us, so you heard us been talking about him for quite a while. You know, if this was a year ago, we'd have a problem. We're excited. He's earned playing time. We're trying to find a way without disrupting the cohesiveness of the offensive line. And that's why we put him at tight end and just try to get him in the game. But he's ready to go.
There was a report out today saying that next year would be your last year. Do you care to comment on that? Is there any truth to it at all?
No comment on that.
But Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith shut down that report. We keep waiting for these hideous stories to fade away, keeping in mind that some people are falsely accused in this world of Me Too opportunism. A lot of money out there to be won in these cases. But there is no quibbling at all about Kareem Hunt. He punched and kicked a woman. We see it on the video. And if Ray Rice's career is over, why should Hunt play another down in the National Football League? And the most shocking development of the NFL season is upon us now. Are the Dallas Cowboys, left for dead only weeks ago, finally developing a complete football team that will make postseason impact in spite of Jerry Jones? And have they unmasked a flaw in the New Orleans Saints, whose vaunted offense was overwhelmed and bull rushed into a stupor by DeMarcus Lawrence, Leighton Vander Esch, I love those names, and Rod Marinelli's defense pressuring and knocking down Drew Brees into an inept state? Now, was this a mere blip or a blazing statement? All I know is Lawrence went on a verbal rampage off camera this week saying, and I'm quoting him, this is not me, it's him, quote, "For 60 minutes straight, if you hit a mother bleeper in the mouth, and then they ain't doing what they're regularly doing, putting up 50 points, they start to get a little distressed. Now you got them where you want them at, and then you bleeping choke their ass out," end quote. DeMarcus Lawrence. You know what? That's precisely what Lawrence and the Cowboys did to Brees and the Saints. And on that shocking pivot, so much turned. The MVP candidacy of Brees hitting a rut. The Saints surrendering the top NFC seed right now to the LA Rams. And Jerry strutting his stuff with a successful game week speech after decades of underachievement and mismanagement. And the Saints not having the NFC title game in the Superdome, that could be a killer for them. Can you imagine Jerry Jones as a Super Bowl owner after all these years? Hell, Donald Trump became president, so I guess the impossible is possible, with the impetus for this run being the Jones trade. Give him props for Amari Cooper, which has opened up the clog for Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott, even though Dak almost blew it with another fumble, his 11th of the season, before Jordan Lewis intercepted a poor Breeze pass. Here was Jason Garrett, the coach Jones did not fire, who delivered his own rousing pep talk. Where was all this talk before in Dallas?
One of the big keys to this game was handle the success of the game and keep playing, handle the adversity of the game and keep playing. It was going to be a 60-minute game. You know, we got out in front of this thing. We did a good job stopping them defensively. We did a good job possessing the football offensively. We got ahead, but we knew they'd keep coming, and we had to keep coming. And we made some critical stops at the end of the ball game. Everybody had a piece of it.
And here was Saints coach Sean Payton trying to understand it all.
Tip your hat to Dallas. I thought those guys did a good job tonight and, you know, played a heck of a game, deserved to win the game. You know, I thought we struggled really throughout the night having any consistency offensively. I thought we made enough plays defensively. We kind of felt like it would be a lower scoring game coming in, but, you know, we just didn't do enough things. And that starts with us as coaches, the plan going in. There'll be a lot we watch on tape and you know, regret certain plays. But before I get into any of that, you really got to tip your hat to the way they played.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but how about them Cowboys? And I don't normally hyperventilate about a pre-Christmas NBA game, but Kevin Durant versus Kawhi Leonard, blow after blow, bomb after bomb, Steph Curry and Civvies trading trash talk with Drake. This was vintage stuff in Canada, up north. And Draymond Green, wherever you were, do you still think Durant is a bitch? That was Draymond's word. After Durant scored 51 and forced overtime with two contested threes. Marvelous stuff. It might have been an NBA Finals preview, or I don't know, merely an early season tease, but Leonard, healthy, happy, done with Greg Popovich, was a beast as the Raptors shredded the Warriors, who lost in overtime after overcoming an 18-point deficit. Most of that game, Toronto dominated. Durant got little help. A lot of bad Andre Iguodala late, misfiring Klay Thompson. On Durant's latest crazy night, his third straight game over 40 points. But let's stick to the Raptors here. They deserve much applause for their dramatic makeover. Not many perennial playoff teams would fire the newly named Coach of the Year, 59-win Dwayne Casey, to hire his top assistant, the obscure Nick Nurse. Not many teams would trade cornerstone DeMar DeRozan, an all-star and fan favorite, for perhaps one season of Leonard, who becomes a free agent at season's end, of course. But Raptors boss Masai Ujiri risked plenty with those moves. And while the Warriors did not have Curry or Draymond, the Raptors, now 19-4, delivered that powerful home victory that sent the team ambassador Drake into delirium, as if it's God's plan, wink, wink, to win a championship. Notice how the Raptors run. They love the high pace. It's a different team. They're very entertaining. And here was Kawhi, who had a cool 37 with some late defensive stops on Durant. Loving Toronto, Kawhi?
I'm happy that we executed down the stretch. And we were able to make shots. We were able to get some stops in that overtime. And you know, it's a building block for us, and I'm happy we got the win.
What was the atmosphere like?
What was the atmosphere like?
What did it feel like for game 23?
It was great. You know, when the games come down to the stretch like that, the crowd's in it. Everyone's in it. It only makes you better.
No wonder Leonard has been heavenly in Toronto, inspiring the Raptors with quiet leadership and production. And while he might be viewing this as a one-year vacation in Canada before returning to his native Southern California, and I think, by the way, he would join the Clippers and would avoid being a LeBron subordinate with the Lakers, Kawhi at the moment is thinking about a championship. He also doesn't appreciate, and I loved this, continued noise out of San Antonio from the coach who couldn't pacify him, Greg Popovich, who said the other day that Leonard wasn't much of a leader with the Spurs. In a rare retort, Leonard said he has moved on from Popovich.
Did you see the comments that Pop made yesterday regarding your leadership?
I heard about it, but, you know, it's just funny to me because, you know, I don't know if he's talking about last year or not, but I guess when you stop playing, I forget how you lead. But other than that, I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm here with the Raptors, and I'm focused on the season and not what's going on the other side.
Sorry, go ahead, Josh. What kind of a leader would you say you are?
Lead by example, coming into practice every day, busting, just going hard and coming into these games mentally focused. And, you know, you can't see things once you're playing on the floor. Guys ask me questions about their matchup, or if I see someone on the floor, I'm telling guys, go here, go there, or just motivating people, you know what I mean? And just try to lift people's spirits up on the floor. That's about it. Just don't try to get nobody too down and just lift them up.
Leonard also apparently has moved on from the Jordan brand, signing a multi-year deal with New Balance, which doesn't care about his understated personality and his aversion to social media, which is the NBA way these days, NBA Twitter. Kawhi doesn't go on that. I like him for that reason. With Nurse as the offensive mastermind, as he was when Casey was getting the credit, the Raptors might be the NBA's most complete team at the moment, rated in the top six in offense and in the lost art of defense. And how about Nurse wearing that wild blue suit jacket on a night when TNT was honoring the late Craig Sager? Kyle Lowry, the point guard, never has played better as the league's assist leader. He doesn't like shooting long three-pointers, though. They let him stay open and he misses. That's a flaw, but I'm emphasizing the positive here. They have that big man in Jonas Valanciunas, but he doesn't play sometimes because they have so much talent on this team. Major performers in Serge Ibaka and three-point shooter Danny Green, talented kids in OG Anunoby and most improved player candidate Pascal Siakam, and a deep bench with Fred VanVleet, CJ Miles, DeLon Wright. I mean, they're 10 deep, 11 deep. Any team out there deeper than the Raptors. Ujiri was tired of losing every year in the second round. Steph Curry wanted to play in this game, having spent part of his formative youth in Toronto when Father Dell played for the Raptors. He won't return from his left groin strain until Saturday in Detroit, but in his absence, wasn't his MVP candidacy actually bolstered the last few weeks? Think about it. Without him, the team's precious chemistry self-destructed when Green eviscerated Durant and the Warriors lost four straight. They've since looked more like themselves, with Durant brilliant on both ends again on Thursday night. And face it, coming back in that game on the road with a limited roster was impressive. The Warriors will be okay. Don't worry about it. Here was Durant exhausted after giving his shirt to Drake afterward.
I just feel like I just got to do what's required at this point. You know, it's going to be some games that we got a great team game going where we can beat teams with the flow of our offense from moving our bodies, moving the ball. And it's going to be some games where I got to go get buckets. And tonight we were down early, down big, and I just tried to be aggressive to go get a bucket.
Kevin, why do you think in the last three games specifically your game is clicking offensively the way it has been?
Because my only focus is, like I said, just being the best version of me that I can each possession on both ends. And once you just focus on that, you get lost in the game and makes or misses or turnovers or mistakes. It really don't matter. Just move on to the next play.
Assuming MVP voters won't penalize Curry for missing too much time, maybe they will, they should realize how important he is as the leadership adhesive for this team of super egos, the one adult in the room who actually the other day wrote a letter to a 9-year-old girl who said Curry 5 shoes were not for sale in the girls section online, and Steph made damn sure Under Armour fixed the problem. Who does that? On the court, And keep this in mind, Curry's outer space shooting range opens up the court for everybody else. That's what's so impressive about what Durant is doing right now. They're just piling on him, and there's not a lot of spacing on the court. And look what he's doing out there without Curry. With Curry on the floor, the Warriors are outscoring opponents by a team-best 13.5 net rating. Without him, that number sinks to a minus 0.6, a completely different team without Curry. Isn't that the very definition of a most valuable player? I think the Greek Freak would have something to say about that, and I think others will as well this season. The immediate and extended future of the Warriors depends on Green and whether he can grow up and channel his passion positively. But yeah, I could see the Raptors and the Warriors playing in the first Intercontinental NBA Finals. As for LeBron and the up-and-down Lakers, do we have a clash of styles between King James and Magic Johnson? Team boss Magic is urging LeBron to play fewer minutes and not have the ball in his hands as much. He wants to play an up-tempo game, but LeBron, who in Cleveland was all about slow down, half court, reportedly has been ignoring play calls from Coach Luke Walton and running the offense the way he damn well feels, which is what traditionally happens when LeBron's teams are erratic. Magic denies that LeBron is ignoring Walton, but he doesn't exactly weigh in with a robust vote of confidence after the recent meeting in which Magic chewed Walton out. Here was Johnson with former NBA player Eddie Johnson, no relation, on Sirius XM Radio. If you were Luke Walton, would you feel confident hearing this?
We have two point guards like Ball and Rondo. We don't have to have LeBron using the ball, having the ball in his hands all the time. And so you're right. We're trying to make sure that we watch his minutes, but also that we don't run everything through him, because now it is Cleveland all over again, and we don't want that.
The Lakers have no easy games, and it was a good thing before the Indiana game to hear an inspirational talk from Denzel Washington, who could have channeled his performance as Coach Herman Boone speaking to his team in a Gettysburg cemetery in Remember the Titans. After all, the Lakers had been throttled in Denver after a lame home loss to Orlando. You watch this team, poor shooting, weak rebounding, low energy, ebb and flow, up and down, high and low, no consistency. So why not bring in Denzel?
Anybody know what this place is? This is Gettysburg. This is where they fought the Battle of Gettysburg. 50,000 men died right here on this field, fighting the same fight that we're still fighting amongst ourselves today. This green field right here is painted red, bubbling with the blood of young boys, smoke, and hot lead pouring right through their bodies. Listen to their souls, man. I killed my brother with malice in my heart. Hatred destroyed my family. You listen. Take a lesson from the dead. If we don't come together right now on this hollow ground, we too will be destroyed.
LeBron, the show business mogul, was quick to name his favorite Denzel movies. Way too much show business out here from LeBron. Not enough basketball, but damn it, he'll tell you his favorite Denzel movies. To be fair, he was asked about it, but boy, did he bite.
I don't know. Top three will be Man on Fire. He got game, obviously. Everybody wanted to be Jesus Shuttlesworth growing up. For me personally, I did. And I don't know. I would say those two right off the top. I mean, I love so many of his movies, to be honest. I mean, Remember the Titans, John Q.
Training Day?
Training Day. Wow. I mean, yeah, who could forget about him? I mean, Lonzo, of course. I mean, saw so many. So many.
You guys spoke to Denzel yesterday. He spoke to
us. Yeah, he spoke to us.
And you posted, you said, I thank you more than you know. I'm just curious, what's the sentiment?
No, it's I also said that, you know, I was at a boxing match, you know, earlier this, I think September or something. And Will Smith and Dave Chappelle was there too, and I posted the same thing. I grew up watching these guys. I grew up admiring these guys, admiring their craft, wanting to be like certain characters that they portrayed either in TV shows or movies or stand-up, you know? So that's what it all boils down to. It's like, you know, I appreciate those guys and thank them more than they know. They have no idea that they was inspiring a kid from Akron, Ohio, and these guys are in Los Angeles shooting movies and TV shows, or you know, they're on tour doing, you know, skits and, you know, things of that nature. So that's what it boils down to, you know. And my, where I grew up is really, the only really inspirations is, it's really like drug dealers. Those are the only inspirations that you have in where I grew up, you know. And, you know, thank God I was able to, you know, be inspired by people that was doing it the right way.
I mean, he sounds like a Hollywood guy first now. He's like a guy who shows up at the Y to play basketball at noon. I'm not being fair. I know that. But hey, let's do lunch, LeBron! We still haven't seen the young Lakers core develop with consistency, especially compared to the very quick chemistry lab stirred up by Doc Rivers with the down-the-hallway Clippers. And such a weak-ass formula will not work for the Lakers in the West, where every team but Phoenix at the moment is a playoff contender. If you looked at the standings. The fans keep hoping for a deal for Anthony Davis, but there are obstacles for Johnson and Rob Pelinka. In that sense, one, the young core is not nearly as good as advertised, not as marketable, and James knows it. And two, in the end, the Celtics actually might have the best package to land Davis in the offseason. They are armed with a bushel of number one picks and an overload of young stars. And if Kawhi does stay in Toronto or signs with the Clippers and Jimmy Butler stays in Philly and Durant stays with Golden State, who's coming to the Lakers? Kemba Walker? Who's coming? It's still possible LeBron's L.A. stint will be a bust. I'm just saying. I'm just warning you as he probably introduces another documentary and keeps making his mark in Hollywood now that others have taken over the NBA. I mean, come on. We just watched Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant. Do you think LeBron James at the moment belongs on that elite level? And you may say, shut up, Mariotti, you're a LeBron hater. No, I know what the cream of the cream is when I watch sports. And LeBron at the moment is the fourth or fifth best player in the NBA. Sorry to disappoint all you LeBron people, but just look at his team right now and his ups and downs, especially defensively. Just a little bit of a warning there. And I advised friends before the season to buy season tickets for the Clippers. That way, at a much cheaper price, they could see the stars of the NBA and LeBron twice. But look what's going on at Staples Center. Tobias Harris and Doc Rivers one-upping the king right now. With Harris as the breakout star and Rivers continuing to flash his coaching chops with a revamped no-superstar-ego roster, completely unlike the Griffin-Paul Jordan days, the Clippers continue to be the surprise team in the West, with Harris emerging as a quiet star, an efficient shooter from all ranges, Montrezl Harrell just as efficient as a scorer and rebounder. The Clippers get so much cohesion from their roster, a healthy Danilo Gallinari, veterans such as Avery Bradley, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams still pouring in points. Rookie point guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a find. And in this small ball deep shooting era in the NBA, Rivers loves 7-4 Boban Marjanovic, who is clumsy at times but also unstoppable in the paint. Here was Doc loving life right now on Boban, or as the Staples Center PA guy bellows, Boban.
You know, it's funny. He has this thing, especially last year. You know, it just feels like you always are, especially, and even your staff, you're always looking for a reason why you shouldn't play. You know, and, you know, I had a big, not a blow up with my staff recently about why do we keep saying what he can't do? You know, for now we're only talking about what he does, you know, because he does a lot of good stuff out on the floor. And, yeah, there's areas where he struggles because of his size, but I like the things that he do. I think it's more of a plus for us than a minus when he's on the floor.
All in all, Rivers is having much more fun than he ever did when expectations were high. And while the Clippers are not contenders, what a hoot if they make the playoffs and LeBron does not. If college football often is short shrifted in the fall, it hits center stage in December, even with the same old programs fighting for the same four playoff berths. So sit your ass down Saturday for day-night drama with games involving five of the six potential playoff teams. We've already seen Georgia's Kirby Smart come frighteningly close to upending his mentor Nick Saban in the national title game, and it took Saban to make an all-time mid-game move, replacing all-SEC quarterback Jalen Hurts with all-world Tua Tagovailoa to plant this year's seeds for an Alabama repeat. In the SEC title game, can Georgia control the ball with another pounding rushing attack, which includes freshman Elijah Holyfield, son of you-know-who, of Vander, to complement the improving QB Jake Fromm? I think you'd be dumb not to pick Saban, whose record is 15-0 against his former assistants. And you'd be dumb not to pick Tua, who leads an offense that has scored 44 touchdowns on 63 red zone trips, okay? Saban gunning for an all-time record 7th national championship doesn't usually talk about fun this time of the year, but he was this week.
Well, you love to see the players have fun. You know, I know that they're pretty serious a lot of the time in terms of what they need to do to, you know, play at a high level. That you can't be focused and have a certain amount of mental intensity to be able to play and compete at this level. But at the same time, you know, you should get excited and have fun when you make good plays, as well as, you know, we share disappointments when we make bad plays. So I think that's part of being a team. I mean, being on a team is a lot like being in a family, you know. I mean, sometimes things go well in your family and everybody's happy, and sometimes things can happen that aren't so good, and, you know, you all got to kind of persevere together. So that's pretty much – but look, when some of your best players on your team are really good guys, that always makes for good team chemistry.
I say Alabama 27, Georgia 18, which would eliminate the Dogs from the equation, despite the top 25 being overloaded with SEC teams. And while nothing special Pitt teams have given top-ranked teams trouble in the past, including Clemson 2 years ago, I think Clemson eases into the number two seed behind Alabama because of superior talent on both sides of the ball. Their defensive line is NFL-like, and so is running back Travis Etienne, the ACC's Player of the Year. Clemson 41, Pitt 17. Undefeated Notre Dame locked in at number three to play Clemson, though nobody is viewing the Irish as a title team. Which leaves us with two games that will be scrutinized and compared every nanosecond. Oklahoma-Texas, Ohio State-Northwestern. Northwestern. If Oklahoma and Kyler Murray prevail handily, as they should, the committee almost certainly will flip the Sooners from number five to number four, setting up a breathtaking Murray versus Tua national semifinal. Only an Oklahoma loss to Texas makes room for a powerhouse Ohio State offense that should make mush in the Big Ten title game of overmatched Northwestern. Northwestern? Yeah. Which actually lost to Akron this season. Hometown of who? LeBron James. Also the birthplace of who? Steph Curry. Did you know that? Did you know that Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh were, Mariotti aside, were actually born in the same hospital, only a couple of years apart. A Mariotti aside. You know, I should know where. It's either somewhere. Where would that be? Ohio, right? It would be somewhere in Ohio. Yeah. It wasn't Michigan. Urban Meyer would not be born in Michigan. All right, I had Mariotti aside. But Ohio State's resume is smeared by an ugly 29-point loss to 6-6 Purdue, which has led to speculation that the polarizing Meyer will retire amid health issues. Here is Meyer vowing to return next year and actually getting some jokes out of it.
How are you doing?
Good.
What are your plans?
Good.
And then Saturday, you know, the TV camera seemed to be on you as much as it was the action on the field. And just, what are your plans post whatever?
No. Good.
So you're good.
Good.
That's the definitive statement.
Good.
There's speculation out there. Will you be coaching Ohio State next season?
I plan to coach, and their kickoff team is very good, too, and they really understand contain and all those type of things.
Rob Mullins, who is the selection committee chairman, explained why Oklahoma is ranked one slot ahead of Ohio State.
Well, obviously, we spent a lot of time on that one, for sure. But when you look at it, Oklahoma's body of work is still impressive. I understand that the defensive deficiencies are there, and we talk about that, but they really have a historic offense, and what Kyler Murray and that offense is able to do scores enough points to win games, and at the end of the day, it's about results.
Plenty of trash talk fired this week between the Oklahoma and Texas players, with Murray issuing a no comment when asked about Longhorns quarterback Sam Ellinger, and Ellinger responding on Twitter, quote, okay, cool, hook 'em, unquote. This after Ellinger walked up to Murray after the Longhorns' victory earlier this season with no sportsmanship evident between them.
I went up to him to congratulate him on a great game.
If it was the other way around, I wouldn't have, you know, I would have been with my teammates. If we would have won the game, I wasn't going to run up to him. You know.
And Sooners linebacker Curtis Bolton had a retort for Texas defensive end Brecken Hager, who said Oklahoma has no defense.
Are you aware of what one of their captains said about your defense last week, that basically you guys don't have defense?
Blows my mind. We hung 50 on them too, so if anyone on their defense has anything to say, they can have fun playing Kyler next week. So.
Okay, I'm going to go with Oklahoma 48, Texas 37, and Ohio State 64, Northwestern 17. And that still should be enough for Oklahoma to squeeze in to the playoff, because nobody loses to Purdue by 29 and makes the Final Four, no matter how bad Oklahoma's defense is. And Baker Mayfield very quickly has become an NFL lightning rod, as he was in college, firing up an Ohio rivalry and talk show commentators alike when he referred to his former head coach with the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, as fake. Baker was referring to how Jackson immediately signed with the rival Cincinnati Bengals and that he had no respect for Jackson's move, which led to fireworks on ESPN with racial lines drawn, unfortunately, which is what TV networks do to spike ratings. Former NFL players Damian Woody and Ryan Clark trashing Mayfield for hypocrisy, pointing out how Baker left Texas Tech for Oklahoma and that Jackson needed a job. Mayfield fired back at them, saying he didn't lose 30-plus games as Jackson did with the Browns and that he wasn't being compensated with a scholarship at Oklahoma. He was walking on, paying himself. Baker has a point. Personally, I don't care if Jackson goes and gets a job somewhere else, even with the heated rival Bengals. I don't care, but you know what Baker's doing? He's trying to unite the locker room, fire up the fans. I get it, and you know what? It's working, and he's playing his ass off. This would not have been a hot-button topic if not for Mayfield being white and Jackson being black, and it's disturbing that ESPN allows these arguments to explode for the sake of ratings. They know what a black-white argument is. They got Stephen A. here, Max Kellerman here. I don't like it. They bring in this conservative, I can't even think of the guy's name, Will Kane, and then the three of them are screaming at each other. It's like, what is this, CNN? Is this MSNBC? I don't want to watch this. What are they doing? You know, are they? They must be hurting for ratings in the mornings. It's the only thing I can think of, because otherwise, it's not appetizing. I don't like the racial lines debating. I don't like it, and they do it, and they'll never admit it. Here was Mayfield not taking anything back as he settles in as a rock star quarterback for a woeful franchise that suddenly has hope.
Baker, did you think that your handshake with Hugh at midfield would spark as much as it has?
You know, people took it as me personally attacking Hugh. That's not it. It's the fact that I get to have my own opinion on how it transpired, and he gets to do what he wants. That's how it is. Although I'm an athlete, I'm not a cookie cutter quarterback. Never have been, never will be. I speak my mind. That's just how I am. So I didn't like the move, and people don't have to care. I mean, I'm not looking for anybody's approval. I don't regret any of it. You know, it's about this team and what we have, and we have to stick together and play together.
Why'd you call him fake?
There's just things that happen inside the building that I'm not going to get into detail with. It's in-house information. It doesn't matter. I do everything with a purpose. So when somebody comments on my story when they really don't know anything about it, I get to voice my opinion just like he's on a talk show voicing his. So that's like I said, I'm entitled to that. And there's certain things about me being myself, which, yeah, I think helps this team. But in no way am I trying to create a distraction. I think everybody in this locker room knows that. And so the people on the outside can say what they want. Inside this locker room, we have each other.
And Mayfield's recent play caller, offensive coordinator Freddie Kitchens, says he's standing right behind Baker. He says, quote, "Baker's not going to blow smoke up anybody's ass," unquote. I love it. Mayfield returns to Texas to take on the smoking Texans, who are riding Deshaun Watson, a forgotten man amid the Mahomes, Goff, Mayfield hype circus. He's leading the Texans to an unlikely division title. All I have to say is if Mayfield keeps producing, he can talk all he wants, but if he flops, look out. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are runaway losers as the NFL's most dysfunctional team, losing seven straight amid locker room infighting, the firing of offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, and the benching of, here we go, brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles, brutal Blake Bortles. I did it. He's on the bench now, and he is brutal. Team boss Tom Coughlin, he's in his 70s, says he'll fight anybody who criticizes him for making few offseason moves for a team that came within a play or two of the Super Bowl. He should have made some moves. A lot of us thought Bortles was over the hump. Nope. As for Blake, who is being replaced by Browns cast-off Cody Kessler, he isn't exactly fighting for his job as he assumes that sideline ball cap. The Jags' tattered defense has to deal with Andrew Luck, the league's best comeback story, who is good for three or more touchdowns every game for the playoff-contending Colts and is salivating to be the latest quarterback to shut down and shut up Jalen Ramsey, assuming Ramsey plays. He is supposedly hurt. He has a sore jaw. He has bruised lips. And as the Seahawks threaten to make the playoffs, former Seattle star Richard Sherman is taking shots at Russell Wilson, saying he had no relationship with Wilson and that the quarterback is capable of throwing five picks in a game. That's a good way for Sherman to get booed in Seattle, where the turmoil-filled 49ers have no shot. The biggest games are the late afternoon games, Vikings at Patriots, with Minnesota playing the kind of two-way football, Kirk Cousins and his receivers matched with a blitzing defense to beat New England at home in December. That is followed by LA's orphan team, the Chargers, with their biggest game of the Anthony Lynn era. He's their coach, by the way. Sunday night in Pittsburgh. I would love to pick Phillip Rivers, who has joined Brady and Breeze at least before Thursday night in a triumvirate of age-defying quarterbacking brilliance, but Phillip won't have Melvin Gordon, and the Steelers do need this game after last week's stinker in Denver. Should the Chargers pull it out, they might be announcing themselves as a potential Super Bowl team after all of those playoff failures. And the nerve of Ben Roethlisberger, who will have to stay limber to avoid Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa and rookie terror Derwin James, to knock teammates Antonio Brown and James Washington after his flurry of recent interceptions. 12 on the season, including that game killer against the Broncos. But that's Ben. In his advanced age, he says what he wants, and even if it stings, he claims to be doing it only to help teammates. Ben, do you have to do it publicly?
Ben, when you're publicly critical of a teammate, and I know you walk a fine line with that, how, and I'm guessing you don't do it out of frustration, how do you deal with that? Like, when you know when it's time to give a guy a pat on the back or to give him a little bit of a nudge?
Well, being around for a long time, dealing with a lot of different players, you know, I've you have to know how to motivate different guys in different ways, and I think that's part of being a leader, being a captain, just understanding players. And so sometimes you just grab them off to the side, and sometimes you have to be honest with them. And so I think that I've earned the right to be able to do that with as long as I've been here. And, you know, it's and I'll be just as critical of myself as well in front of you guys as well.
What's your approach to how players in the locker room might receive those kind of things? Like, for instance, if you critique a route or something like that?
Go ask them. I have no idea. You'll have to ask them. I would hope that they would understand that as the quarterback and the captain that I have the right to do those things. I don't feel like I abuse that situation. So, you know, I don't think there's an issue, but you'll ask them.
As for Ben's former teammate, holdout and imminent free agent Le'Veon Bell, he is eyeing Indianapolis as his next stop, posting on Instagram that he would love to play with Andrew Luck and a Colts team with an NFL-high $123 million in cap space. But Colts GM Chris Ballard, who has done a terrific job protecting Luck and rebuilding on the fly, tends to add pieces via the draft more than in free agency. That said, the Colts are just average with their current no-name running backs. Imagine what Bell as a runner and a receiver could do for Andrew Luck. Spend your money, Jim Irsay. You owe it to Luck, and you owe it to the fans. I mean, my God, Andrew Luck has been beaten to smithereens in Indy. Get him Le'Veon Bell. And isn't it like a former agent to ignore the wee bitty issue of an 80-game PED suspension? New Mets general manager Brody Van Wagenen. Where did a Mariotti aside? I hate to stereotype. Okay, Brody Van Wagenen. He went to Stanford. Was he on that Melrose Place show? I'm sorry. Mariotti's. I got. What? Hi. I'm Brody Van Wagenen. Okay. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Anyway, he made instant headlines in New York, acquiring the former Yankee Robinson Cano from Seattle in a deal that also brings the Mariners all-star closer Edwin Diaz. My God, what a great move. Right out of the chute, Brody. So much for Van Wagenen tanking in his first year with the Mets. Instead, he inherits Cano, the juicer, and his former client after negotiating Cano's 10-year, $240 million deal in 2013. Cano still owed $120 million the next 5 years. That's, I guess Brody still gets that commission, right? How wacky is that? But the Mets have the money for Cano and Diaz, who led the majors with 57 saves. What a deal! You might ask, what the hell are the Mariners doing? They've got a lot of issues in that franchise. They are getting a bunch of big-time prospects from the Mets and veterans they can get rid of later, big salaries. But their fans cannot be happy after a late-season flop extended the longest playoffless drought in a North American professional sports. And Major League Baseball is nothing if not hypocritical and blinded by millions of dollars, right? After all these decades of decrying the evils of gambling, from Pete Rose's lifetime ban to the 1919 fixing scandal of the Black Sox, how shameful to suddenly accept $80 million to promote betting on its games. Hypocrisy! This comes so predictably after the Supreme Court's decision to allow states to legalize sports gambling. And while Commissioner Rob Manfred often has spoken about the ability of gambling to impugn baseball's integrity on and off the field. He suddenly turns his head when MGM Resorts offers a fortune as an official gaming partner of Major League Baseball. So MLB has joined the NBA and NHL as leagues panting and frothing at the mouth to profit from gambling. And at some point with the Raiders coming to Vegas, the NFL will be next. Yet, there is no talk whatsoever from these leagues or the media companies loading up on reporters to write and report about gambling, about the millions of problem gamblers in this country who will be even more tempted now to wager now that it's legal. I talk about this a lot. I'm not going to stop talking about it because nobody else talks about it. It's like telling people here, shoot up heroin. It's legal now. Here's your needle. And go ahead, shoot up, which, by the way, they do out here in San Francisco. We got to help problem gamblers, not aid and abet them. I don't quite know why the leagues have not really come out with strong statements as they so heavily pursue gambling relationships. That is a Mariotti aside. A month after another poorly rated World Series, Manfred again is prioritizing the quick buck over these severe problems in his game, pace of play, lack of action, length of games, no 20-second pitch clock, that threaten baseball's long-term relevance. I don't care if Fox keeps pouring billions into the TV package. The game is a clear fourth in pecking order behind the revived and fun NFL, the very hot NBA, and college football. And the old farts who run baseball are driving it into the ground. I sound like a broken record, but I'm not going to stop talking about it. I agree that Pete Rose should be banned for life, but I also believe MLB should avoid the gambling fray. You can't have it both ways. Instead, we'll soon see these betting windows in ballparks. How about an over-under on how long it takes to see a batted ball in play? I'll set it at 3 minutes, 40 seconds. If the fans are falling asleep at the games, they're not even ordering any beer or popcorn. You gotta do something. Don't let the union push you around. But that's the way the game has been played by the old fart owners. It's, we're making all the money and the union will fight them, but we're making all the money so we win. No, you are ruining baseball. You are all losers. At least off-season free agency and deals will keep our interest as we wait to see if the Yankees are the only team that bids the Scott Boras assigned figure of $400 million to Bryce Harper, or if the Yankees sign Manny Machado and Harper maybe goes to the Dodgers or the Phillies. Teams are putting big names on the trading block. How about the Giants with their new algorithmic front office ace Farhan Zaidi? They might prefer to deal all-time franchise icon Madison Bumgarner and restart a new rebuilding cycle as the three titles in 5 years era fades away. Milwaukee, Philadelphia, most interested in Bumgarner, who comes at a bargain of $12 million next season before his free agency kicks in. And this buzz comes at a bad time for the Giants, whose principal owner, Palm Beach multimillionaire Charles Johnson, angered many African Americans, liberals, and Democrats in the Bay Area when he donated $5,400 to the re-election campaign of U.S. Senator Cindy Hyde Smith of Mississippi, who made comments in support of public hangings at a campaign rally. Ugh. Johnson later eased tensions by calling Hyde Smith's comments stupid and demanding his donation back. But still, at age 85, Charlie should be more cognizant of his political activity. Across the Bay, are the Oakland A's actually ready to pounce on the Giants' problems? After shocking us last season with a fun, young, homegrown team, the A's announced a plan, for what it's worth, for a new privately built ballpark by the water in Oakland. Warning, we've seen this nonsense so many times before, but if owner John Fisher truly cares, he will seize the demise of the Giants and try to create this new vibe in the East Bay, especially with the Warriors moving to San Francisco next year and the Raiders to Vegas. The Atlanta Braves had a brief taste of October, and they want more, signing Josh Donaldson to a one-year, $23 million deal. gambling that he will stay healthy. But the Arizona Diamondbacks waving the white flag in a division with the Dodgers and Rockies are going to be tanking now, which is sad after home-growing a local star in Paul Goldschmidt. Might he end up in Houston for a steal and another pre-free agency bargain contract? Whoa. Going to bet against the Astros this time if they have Goldschmidt in that lineup. Ace Patrick Corbin already is out the door, possibly to the Yankees for a six-year contract. And Zach Greinke and A.J. Pollock also could be traded, meaning there is no reason to attend games at that oversized garage in downtown Phoenix in the summer heat. Don't go. And after the Red Sox won it all, might the Yankees actually sign Corbin and Bryce Harper with that easy right field porch in the Bronx to go with James Paxton? I mean, the Yankees can afford it. And Van Wagenen across town might not be done wanting to fill multiple holes by shopping Thor himself, Noah Syndergaard, possibly to San Diego. So you got Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer on the market in Cleveland, Syndergaard, Bumgardner, others. See a theme? Teams are so committed to bullpenning, they are dumping their high-priced starting pitchers before they have to be paid big money again. You know, I would like to like baseball, but the men who run baseball won't let me like it. And Mike Krzyzewski wants the best of the one-and-done crop, including Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, but he doesn't want the pressure that comes with four potential NBA lottery picks. Coach K scolding Duke fans for expecting too much so soon after last week's loss to Gonzaga, which thankfully ends talk of a perfect season. Coach K can get away with that when students camp out in Krzyzewskiville outside Cameron Indoor Stadium. In particular, Krzyzewski was frustrated by criticism that Barrett repeatedly kept driving inside against the Zags, only to have his shot rejected.
Duke fans, just cut it out, man. These kids aren't perfect. So my kid wasn't playing hero ball. He's playing winner's ball. And if you don't like fouling them, then don't foul us. Yeah, I'll go to war with my guys. Yeah, he has the heart to do that. Jack had the heart to get the rebound. We lose, I'll lose with them. And let's get real about this whole thing. Let's not get spoiled. We got 4 and 19-year-old kids there trying to bust their ass to learn how to play and have a lot of pressure on them and let them grow.
Going on 72, nobody knows how long Coach K will stick around. With the one-and-done syndrome he embraced about to end, maybe he'll leave if he wins it all this season. But LeBron James weighing in on this, he watched that Krzyzewski comment the other night on TV, and he decides to weigh in that he hopes Coach K will stick around long enough for now 14-year-old LeBron Jr. to play freshman ball at Duke, assuming he's not already in the NBA in 2023, tweeted LeBron, quote, love Coach K, the absolute best. Hope he's still at the helm when my boy comes up. It sounds like a promise, LeBron, but hey, if you've watched LeBron's documentaries, he thinks college players are being exploited. So how much will LeBron want Duke to pay Bronny? Fair question. And isn't that illegal? And at Iowa, this is not a topic we do here, Iowa hoops, longtime team broadcaster Gary Dolphin violated cardinal rule number one in his profession. Just because you are in a commercial break, pal, doesn't mean nobody's listening. Admiring how well Pitt's freshman guards were playing, Dolphin proceeded to criticize Iowa's recruiting efforts under Coach Fran McCaffrey and the play of the team's current guards. Oops.
Iowa down 6 at the half, 46-40, needing to clean some things up defensively. Back with our Budweiser halftime show in a minute. This is Hawkeye basketball from Learfield.
He's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
How do we not get anybody like that?
Do they not want them?
We just,
know
we just don't. I mean, it's just year after year after year.
Go get a key piece like that.
Just get one. They got three or four. This guy's first year.
Oh, I'm sure he knows where they're at, Duke.
Yeah, true.
Handling all that.
We get Macy Daly. Dribbles into a double team with his head down. God. Three pure freshmen.
Jeez.
Yeah. And they're both in double. Two of them are in double figures.
I like Johnson.
Oh, man. I like
McGowan.
I like McGowan.
Yeah, he was a Hargrave military one.
Yeah, he was on at Hargrave.
Dolphin was suspended for 2 games. His partner, former NBA player Bob Hansen, was not suspended for chiming in. I think at season's end, Dolphin likely will be fired, left to fish for a new gig. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, the Cowboys shocked the Saints, reducing Drew Brees to Nathan Peterman. Is this a fluke? And if the Saints aren't at home in the Superdome for the entire NFC postseason, does this open the door for your LA Rams to win the NFC?
I mean, it makes it a little bit easier. It just that Superdome would be horribly tough to play a playoff game in, especially for the Rams that already know in their head their one loss so far is their New Orleans. But Lions, Rams, that's first up. That's week 13. And the Lions have upset the Pats and the Packers. I mean, Brady and Rodgers, what's a mere Jared Goff to them? So hopefully the Rams fans and my Rams could just keep their head on straight, get the Lions this Sunday, then a tough Sunday night game in the brutal cold of Soldier Field against the Bears. But if all can pan out, right now, yes, they have the advantage. But just take a deep breath, win out as best you can, and hope that maybe the Saints drop another one just to give you a little safety, but we'll see. But I'm still stunned that the Cowboys won that game.
And college football's Final Four, Chris, will be decided this weekend. I feel like it's deja vu. You want to pick Georgia over Alabama, but you can't. And you want to see Oklahoma and Ohio State lose to create chaos, but you can't. So, Chris, you pick the Final Four, and who is your eventual national champ?
Jay, why can't you pick the Georgia Bulldogs over Alabama? That game was only in the hedges. Is that what they call it? Between the hedges and the hedges? We haven't talked about Georgia for so long. You know, that it's all about Alabama and Clemson and this year Notre Dame and Oklahoma. Ugh, I can't take it, Jay. I would love to see Lincoln Riley and Oklahoma be an upset that gets in there somehow. I would love to see Notre Dame, as much as I hate Notre Dame as an SC fan, pull some type of upset and pull it out and win the national championship because it'd be good for college football. What's not going to be good for college football is Alabama-Clemson and Alabama winning another national championship. But, Jay, that's what is going to happen, okay? So, Jay, it may be just a little bit boring, but here's what I'm going to give you. Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma. How about that for parity? And all joking aside, Jay, I want to take a moment as we end off the week to applaud Clark Hunt. You know, his father, Lamar Hunt, and I'm a big AFL historian guru. I love watching that Showtime special. I think they aired on Showtime, but maybe the NFL Network did it years ago. But the story, Full Color Football, the story of the AFL. Lamar Hunt, along with his friends, his buddies, that launched the AFL in 1959, they were brave, brave men that did something that nobody thought was possible, which was take on the mighty National Football League. And Lamar Hunt, along with Al Davis and others, decided to go up against Goliath. And it was tough. It was tough for a long time. But they fought through. And even though Lamar Hunt came from an oil family and was a Texan, he said, you know what, for the good of the league, I need to move my team, the Dallas Texans, out of Dallas and moved them to Kansas City. And they became the Kansas City Chiefs. All these years later, his son would make him proud because Clark Hunt decided today to cut a superstar that is on how many millions of fantasy teams across the country, a guy who could definitely help pave the way to a Super Bowl run, to an impressive Chiefs team led by a superstar quarterback, Andy Reid, all that good stuff that we like to talk about when things are good. But things are bad when you have a video of a professional athlete who's massive in size brutalizing a woman for no other reason than, no matter, there is no reason that ever could justify that, as we know, to ever put your hands on a woman. So I want to applaud Clark Hunt, the son of Lamar Hunt, for today being brave like his father and stepping up to the NFL and saying zero tolerance and cutting a superstar. I hope that the same change his father delivered in sports by creating the merger of the NFL and the AFL, the Super Bowl, which gives us the modern day NFL. Hopefully, this creates his son created a lot of change today as well in cutting Kareem Hunt, who deserves to be cut. He deserves, frankly, to never play football again. And that's all I got on that, Jay. Have a beautiful weekend.
Thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Tiger Woods claiming he was under the weather wants a pay-per-view rematch with Phil Mickelson. Is Tiger not aware that once was more than enough for this schlock, that the golf was ugly, and a streaming snafu forced refunds for the $19.99 fee across the board? Turner is saying 1.7 million watched the event. Turner is lying. Meanwhile, the U.S. Ryder Cup debacle remains a topic as the bro crew, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, even Tiger Woods, continues to ostracize Patrick Reed. When he spilled the beans a few months ago about Spieth not wanting to be paired with him against Team Europe. Such little boys. With football entrenched as the world's foremost sports passion, sure, it makes sense to stage the World Cup once every 2 years. I could go for that. They have those continental championships anyway. Copa America, the Nations League. It's so damn confusing anyway. May as well make it the World Cup once every couple of years. Not that the United States has a say, of course. First, our men's team needs to qualify for the World Cup, and before that, the men's team needs to hire a new coach. That would be nice. The NCAA never fails to make us cringe, and this time it does so with its new basketball ratings metric, known as NET. This is the NCAA's way of replacing the RPI rating, which caused madness on Selection Sundays. But how are we supposed to take this seriously when, in its first ranking, NET had Ohio State 1, Gonzaga, conqueror of Duke, number 5, and Duke, number 6? Anybody with two Visine-treated eyeballs knows that Duke is the overwhelming favorite and that an unbeaten Gonzaga team beat Duke, so it should be Gonzaga 1, Duke 2. Nope. Ohio State? Number 10, Loyola Marymount, right down the road from me here, opened its season with a victory over Westcliff University, an unaffiliated program. Kansas, meanwhile, ranked one spot below at 11, has beaten Michigan State and Tennessee, both top 10 teams in the AP poll, yet the NCAA's got Loyola Marymount over Kansas. That's the NCAA. So many billions, so little brain power. Roy Williams always has been a whiny guy, and with North Carolina off to a sluggish start, here was Roy at his whiniest after a bad loss to Michigan.
Did a heck of a lot better than we did. They coached a heck of a lot better than we did. It's very frustrating right now. As a coach, I feel like I've done the worst job with this team in 31 years as a head coach. But give Michigan the credit. Very frustrated. But as frustrated as I've ever, no, the most frustrated I've ever been. So I love John, John's team. They seem to be really good kids, and they've got a chance to hopefully do some great things. Right now we stink, and we work on a screen on the ball every day, and three plays in a row they set a screen to the middle of the court and dunk it or lay it up. Guys, I got no positive things. If you want some positive things, you better go out and find somebody on the street, because I got no positive for me, no positives for my team.
I still want to know why Roy allowed academic fraud in Chapel Hill on his watch and why the NCAA let Carolina off the hook. I guess they were too busy establishing their new metric for rankings. Isn't academic fraud an equally egregious crime to, say, hookers being in that dormitory at Louisville? I think everybody wanted Rick Pitino's head, and they don't want Roy's head because he's a good old boy. Remember Brad Johnson, who won a Super Bowl as quarterback of John Gruden's Tampa Bay Bucks team way back when? Johnson's son Max, a star quarterback from the state of Georgia, chose LSU as his college destination. But here's the problem with that. Max, a pocket passer, rejected Miami's Mark Richt, who happens to be Max's uncle and a proponent of a pro-style offense. Cry, Uncle Richt. Speaking of the Bucks, they are now offering free additional tickets to season ticket holders after their smallest home crowd in 8 years. This is another franchise that can't get the coach right. Raheem Morris, Greg Schiano, Lovie Smith, Dirk Cutter in, what, a few years here? Who's next? Better question, who wants the job? Finally, when an NFL franchise's eternal woe becomes a Jeopardy answer, isn't it time to consider one's path in life?
Let's do predictions by 2030 for 600, please.
As of 2018, this NFC North team had never even made the Super Bowl, much less won it. But by 2030, gotta happen, right? Jay?
Who are the Detroit Lions?
Yes.
That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.